listening to Rising Above with Becky Davidson.
When you feel like your spouse notices and appreciates what you're doing, you're able to do it. You know, you want to sacrifice anyways, but it really builds for the marriage, you know, being noticed and then finding the love language, whatever that might be, you know, bringing something home special for your student of your spouse, and then you'll know what those things are and you'll be able to pour into them and then it just builds.
Welcome to Rising Above with Becky Davidson, where we hear from special needs families who rise above difficult circumstances and discover that joy can be found in every story. Thank you for joining us. Here's your host, Becky Davidson.
Hey friends, I am so glad that you are joining us this week as we are continuing in our series here on the podcast called The Unexpected. Now, if you have missed any of our previous episodes in this series, you are going to want to go back and check them out. They have been so encouraging, and this episode will be as well. I'm joined this week by my friends Eric and Kristen Freund from Hope on the Hard Road, and they're back on the show with me, and we had such a great conversation about the unexpected differences that we experience in the ways that we respond when our kids receive a diagnosis. You know, so often moms will respond in one way and dads will respond in a different way. And if we're not careful, that can cause conflicts. And so you're going to love hearing their perspective and how they've learned and how they're still learning to navigate those unexpected differences. Hey, Eric and Kristen, thank you so much for being on the show today. I am so glad to see you guys again. You're some of my most favorite people. So thanks for being here.
Aw, Becky, thank you so much. This is such an honor. It really
is. Yeah, we're really glad to be on again.
Well, I've been on your show. You've been on our show before. And I love that it's kind of like we do Rising Above here, you know, in the Upper Cumberland area of Tennessee, but we're, you know, globally through being online. And you guys are doing so many similar things on the West Coast. What, in San Diego area, right?
That's right. Yeah.
And it's amazing. So I would love for you guys to update us on your family. Tell us what's the latest with your family and tell us what's the latest with Hope on the Hard Road.
Yeah. So our family's doing good. Actually some exciting things, changes with our daughter in terms of funding and being able to do some more things, and her world's opening up. We're starting to get more caretakers to duplicate basically what I've been doing for years and taking them out in public. And, you know, for the first time in the last couple of weeks, we've had caretakers pick her up here and go out in public, go shopping, even take her out to dinner, which is a big, we're kind of like, is this going to go okay? Yeah. And then come back and everything worked out well. And, you know, so those are, her world is opening up, and it's a good time because the next phase of her life will be, you know, transitioning out of the school system and into day programs. So it's really timely what's taking place and watching that. And that's exciting for us.
Yeah, it really, really is. I mean, Abby's world is just opening up. And as far as Hope on the Hard Road, we are so excited. The programs that we have are expanding. The families are connecting. It's just really beautiful to see the community growing. And so we're really excited for the near future. We've got a couple events coming up, which are great. We just did our date night, and we've got our mom's retreat coming up and a dad's night out. So they're going to go have a little fun together. So that's always
so
exciting.
Great. Yeah, I saw some of the pictures and videos from your date night, and it looked just so sweet. And what a wonderful gift to give those couples in your area. And then I got to tell you, I'm a little jealous because I wish I were a little closer, because I would so love to go to your mom's weekend. It looks amazing.
Absolutely. So fun. We would love to have you anytime, Becky. Seriously.
Well, it looks so great. And so I just love what you guys are doing, and that your heart is to love and serve families and to encourage them, to give them hope on the hard road of this life and this special needs journey. And so you guys are doing great work, and it's just an honor to get to do ministry with you all and all the things that you're doing on the West Coast. But this conversation, you know, we were in this series here at the podcast, and we're talking about all the unexpected things that come into our life as a result of having a child with a disability. And so I thought, who better than you guys to come on and talk about the differences between how mom responds when there's a diagnosis and how dad responds when there's a diagnosis? Because I think sometimes especially in those early years, those early moments of getting that diagnosis, we respond so differently, and it can cause conflicts. It can cause conflicts in our marriage. It can cause conflicts in our relationships. And so if we can go in with a little bit of a better understanding of, you know, we are created differently and we are going to respond differently, then we can learn to get on the same page. And so think back to when you first received your daughter's diagnosis. And I'm sure you were, you know, seeing things and realizing things were going to be different before you actually got that, the official diagnosis. But Kristen, how did you respond back when you start realizing, okay, things are going to be different?
Yeah. You know, you asked that question and looking back, oh my goodness. I mean, it's almost a little triggering because, you know, we're now almost 20 years down the line, in Abby's growth, and she'll be 20 in May. And, but of course we've come out the other side as well and grown so much as a family and as parents. But yeah, that initial diagnosis, you know, as you say, she has a diagnosis of autism and developmental delays. So we saw some of those developmental delays really around 2 going into 3. And then we started pursuing diagnosis and ended up getting her diagnosed finally at our local children's hospital right before she turned 4. And, you know, right after that, literally only a few months later, you know, we're pushing for supports, we're pushing for therapies, we're pushing, as all the parents do, you know, when you first get a diagnosis. And we went on a vacation to go see my relatives up in Canada. And I can just remember sitting in that, you know, we have a trailer, we pull a trailer behind and we're sitting in the minivan. And I could not speak. I was in such deep grief that entire trip. And we were lucky we had my parents with us, and you know, they just kind of wrapped their loving arms around us. And, but I could not speak, and Eric would just look over at me and I just was speechless or crying. And it was so, so devastating in the beginning. So that was kind of the initial. And in addition to that was all of that pushing that I related to. You know, we got the diagnosis and we didn't know that much about autism, but I had this, I've got to fix it mentality.
Right.
I've got to fix it. And so there was so much, you know, just pushing and anger started to set in, which I'll share a little bit more about, but, that was kind of the initial phases for me.
Yeah. What about you, Eric?
Yeah, I can definitely remember this camping trip. And, you know, being married, you look at your spouse and you see him down and you want to pull him out and you want to, you know, say, hey, snap out of this. You'd be happy. Mm-hmm. We're on vacation and so forth like that. And it was incredibly difficult. But, you know, kind of looking back, we talked to a lot of families about a grief cycle, and she was certainly in the midst of a grief cycle. And, you know, it was hard to understand, quite frankly, for me. I got the diagnosis and like, okay, here we go. It's just kind of, I suppose, numb and going through it. You know, our personalities, obviously everything else plays into it, male, female personalities. I'm just kind of, okay, we'll just roll with it. And, you know, later on I would experience, you know, the grief and some of the other stuff that would come along. But at that point in time, it's kind of like, okay, well, you know, we're in summer, we're going to go on our vacation and be happy. And even though we were together as a family, it was not necessarily a happy trip in a lot of the things we remember. There were some definitely sweet moments, but just watching that and it was really hard to understand. And so, you know, like coming onto this show, I recall this event and wanted to, you know, just be able to pour out to other families. Like, people grieve on different timelines. People grieve and go through this. It's not a linear cycle. And so she was on, you know, a certain journey in terms of that entire process, and I'm on a different journey. And yet here we are, a married couple, and trying to merge those things together. It does present challenge, but just trying to, you know, looking back, I suppose, really create understanding and realizing, you know, there's better days ahead. This is a process. Mm-hmm. It's a journey, and stay the course, because you're going to see brighter days, you know, as you start moving through it.
Mm-hmm. Well, Kristen, I got to ask, because, you know, here you are, you're grieving, and he's kind of, you know, maybe not at the same stage that you are at that point in time. Did that kind of make you mad? I mean, like to be going like, why are you not, do you not see me here struggling? You know, why are you not at the same place I am?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And, you know, we've talked about this and we've gone to counseling, which we'll talk more about too, but, absolutely. I love the honesty of that. I think many couples go through that. And especially in particular, and the dynamics can vary. You know, there's personality plays into it, right? I'm a real go-getter doer. Eric, we always talk about, I speed him up, he slows me down, which is a great combo. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so there's personality that plays into it, but also just the male-female aspect of, you know, mama's heart, mama bear comes out, right? And so, so yes, I was deeply, deeply grieving and I could not understand why he was not in that same stage and phase as me and handling it the same way, even though at that point we'd been married for so many years. And, so it did make me angry. We did have, you know, times where we had to really talk that through. And then, as I said, you know, ultimately, even have some counseling, which helped us through it a lot. And we always encourage couples to reach out to that third party for sure.
Yeah. That, you know, that was kind of our experience too, when we're learning that we're okay, our life is going to look completely different. Well, Jeff, he was in sales at the time. This is before we were in full-time ministry and he was good. He was good at his job. And so he threw himself into his job and he would be down in his office. We had an office in our home and he would be down in his office and I would be, you know, researching and, you know, taking care of John Alex. And he honestly, he would tell you he couldn't handle it. And so he threw himself into his work. And I remember I would call downstairs to his office and I'd be like, I'm getting your son ready for bed. He's getting ready to go to bed. Would you like to come up and tell him good night? You know, and he'd trudge upstairs, but he couldn't handle it in those early phases because like he couldn't fix it. He couldn't make it better. He couldn't, you know, do all the things that he knew to do to help make it better. And so for him, he kind of shut down and then he came alive, you know, and so, and became, I mean, just an amazing father. But in those early years, it was tricky. And so, you know, what were some of the biggest differences that you noticed looking back now, you know, in how you responded?
Yeah, no, I can completely relate to that. That is a lot of what went on. You know, I was doing all the research of the therapies and different things like that, right? And pushing for getting, you know, insurance to cover things and the latest, greatest, you know, solution to the problem is how I saw it early on, right? Because I was really trying to, quote, fix it. But, you know, in that process, I really sort of ran over Eric. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I wasn't listening to him. I was in my, you know, mindset, I was trying to rescue our daughter and I was going to do anything and everything it took. And I didn't see the full picture yet and the beauty that was in her disability. But for Eric, it was a different story on his end.
Yeah. And I mean, she talks about like doing all the therapies and so forth like that. And that's, you know, she's in the medical field to begin with. So that's kind of her gig. I mean, she's good at those things and I kind of let her run with it. I didn't try to fight everything along the way. I tried to have a little bit of wisdom towards that because we want to, you know, there's so much anxiety already with our own daughter, but then these diagnoses, I don't want to be the guy to say no to something. And then all of a sudden that might've been a breakthrough to our daughter as we're going along. And so, you know, really with the journey, she was doing a lot of the caretaking. At that time I was teaching and I was coaching, you know, I played college athletics. And so it's always been a ministry for me was that. And I kind of felt like, you know, she had it. She was doing the stuff at home. She was researching the thing. And so we're kind of on a different wavelength thinking. Not so much I was burying myself, I don't think, into the work. I just, she really, you know, she's a fantastic mom and I thought she had it and was good and she would ask if she needed stuff. And so we were carrying on that way for quite a while until, you know, 2011, things became very evident that our world needed to change in terms of our family life. And, you know, we had to make some hard choices with that and say, in order for this life to kind of take a new direction, in order for it to go in a positive direction, we needed to come together quite a bit more. I had so I stepped down from coaching at that time. Still teaching, still to this day teach, but the coaching and all the hours and all the different commitments with that, pulled back from that and spent time with the family because, you know, these years are precious and it wasn't working at the particular way. And we had to work on this team more than the other teams that I was investing in.
Yeah.
And how brilliant that you saw that and you did it, because a lot of couples don't. And I think that's where the problems then arise, where, you know, this whole life that we have, especially when we're parents to kids with disabilities, is all about dying to ourselves.
That's right.
It's dying to our dreams and our wishes and the things, and allowing new dreams and new visions to come into play. And so, you know, that's amazing that you were, you know, able to see that, step back and do that. And so what are some things, you know, I know it's hard on marriage. It's hard on marriage when we are coming at things in a different way. So how did you process through those differences? I know you've talked about counseling and other things. How did you process through to get to where you are now? Because you guys have been married now for how long?
Yeah, 25 years.
Mm-hmm. 25 years. You just, yeah. I know you got to go on a big trip this year, which was exciting. We talked about that in the last episode. But how did you navigate that? How did you process through to get to where you're like, nope, we're going to make this a priority. We're going to make the changes. I mean, I'm sure it wasn't just an automatic, okay, here we go. Yeah. Let's do it. But how did you process through that?
Yeah, exactly. It was an absolute process. As Eric said, you know, in 2011, it was a real moment of crisis for our daughter. There were medication complications. There was stuff going on at school. She just really tanked. And we had to bring her home for what's called home hospital schooling and stay. And so we were just in this crisis moment. And for me, that was the straw that broke the camel's back. I was just like, I cannot fix this. Mm-hmm. I cannot fix this. And all of that sort of anger that was under the surface boiled over, and it boiled over at anyone and everyone I loved, and especially God. I just looked at God like, okay, I believe in you still, and I have my whole life, but I am so angry at you right now. I do not understand why you did this to us. I don't feel like you love us. Have you abandoned us? You know, all the feelings. And, through that process, we reached out for help. We ended up in a counselor's office, and it was such an amazing experience. This particular counselor had personal experience with having children with autism and was a marriage and family counselor. And so the funny part is we ended up in counseling really for me to start off, right? So Eric's like, you know, we're here. My wife's, you know, seeking out counseling, and I'm here to support her. And little did we know, you know, within weeks, we're really walking through some marriage counseling and some really beautiful, beautiful moments and support. And so I think that was a huge turning point for us, was to really delve into, you know, how we each were grieving, where we were at with it, and to respect that in each other, and to support each other and how that looked. And to gain those tangible tools that you can gain through counseling. And in addition, you know, we had friends and family that stuck with us, supported us, brought meals, loved on us, prayed for us. And he and I, Eric and I, sat down and just really through a process of being able to get some respite care for Abby, we were able to sit down and have conversations. Talk about, what does this need to look like? How do we find better balance? Because that's what was missing, was the balance. And so, you know, what that looked like, I had already stopped working in physical therapy to do all of Abby's therapies and do all the things that needed doing. And Eric made this amazing ultimate sacrifice of no longer coaching after school so that he could be home to help with the therapies, to help with our son's homework, to, you know, switch off with me. And we really worked on that teamwork And so, that's, you know, that's the direction that we took. And those are the supports that kind of came into play for us.
Yeah. And can you imagine, I mean, look at where you are now. Think about if you had not made those changes. Think about how things might have looked had Eric, you're like, nope, I'm going to continue coaching. I'm going to continue doing my thing. If, you know, what do you think things would look like now?
You know, looking back, I mean, it was a hard decision. I think it was like the hard became longer and longer as I did it for, you know, where's this next step in life? In terms of it being some amazing decision, I think it's just coming down to obedience. You know, you're seeking the Lord in the terms of the situation, and he speaks, and you either follow what he's telling you or you do your own thing. And, you know, since I've rededicated my life back in college, it was kind of like he's shown me such a different life that there wasn't a hesitation in terms of following him.
Yeah.
But that being said, you mentioned something earlier about dying to self. It's been a journey, you know, that especially started there to dying self. You know, I envisioned what my life was going to be, and it included, you know, God in the picture and influencing people's lives. But his vision of what it was for me and for us as a family was far different than I expected. Mm-hmm. And having to die to it and not seeing, you know, basically a new life out of this bloom for a while, because I'm like, why am I not being used to coach these kids? Why am I not being an influence? And, you know, only years later, as I keep searching, first off, I mean, and foremost, you know, the biggest thing was making sure that our family at home and all the things going along at home were going to be taken care of. And we came up with a good plan on how we can move forward with all that. And we definitely did. Counseling had a big part of that. Figuring out systems of how we can work together, how we can communicate. Communication is a challenging thing all the time with having a daughter with special needs that runs on anxiety. Both kids, you know, they can feel our emotions quite a bit, and there's a lot of emotions and trying to work through things and finding the time to do that. But that was a huge priority. And so as that started to develop, then, you know, God was speaking, and I know for myself, you're going to start coaching other people, not to be a know-it-all or something like that to these other people, but just kind of, you're going to come alongside other people and something's going to come out of this. There's some good that's going to come out of it, but it takes time. You know, like so many things that God works, his timeline's not our timeline. And it had to start first with us together as a family, us together as a marriage. You know, primarily that's the first thing, working a lot of things through counselors that definitely support us moving forward. And then, as that all took place, you know, then there was going to be something else that birthed out of this, which, you know, obviously Hope on the Hard Road is a part of that.
Did you know Rising Above has an app designed for families raising children with special needs? The app includes a prayer wall to share your prayer requests, respite for your mind, messages of hope, and so much more. Click the link in your show notes to download the mobile app in your app store.
Yeah. And isn't it beautiful how God can take all that pain and all the things that you laid down, both of you, you know, and turn it into this beautiful ministry that you're now using to love and serve families who are like yours. And so I love how God can do that. He can take our offerings and turn it into something we could have never dreamed of or imagined. But, you know, we've got this enemy who likes to cause conflicts in our relationships, in our marriages, but also in our relationship with others. And I think so often there are differences in how maybe mom responds and how dad responds to when there's conflicts within extended family and friends, or when situations come up. And so what have you seen in your journey about the differences of how you guys have responded, or when things have come up that in relationships outside of inside your own home?
Yeah. So outside of our home, you know, I can remember early on, we had a really good core group at our church of young families. And, you know, things began to develop even before Abby was diagnosed. Things would come up, you know, we'd have to, whatever, we're at church and Abby would have a tantrum and we'd have to leave a conversation, right? And so I can remember we ended up telling our group when Abby was diagnosed, this is what is going on. This is what the diagnosis is. And this is so far what we can tell it means for us. It may mean that we have a dinner engagement with someone that we need to cancel last minute because we don't have respite care. It may mean, you know, that our son is going to therapies while yours is going to soccer practice and, you know, alongside his sister and, you know, just different things that came up for us as a family. We wanted our friends to understand. And there were definitely those that stood by us and surrounded us with love and, you know, tangibly reaching out and supporting us and, you know, maybe taking Caleb for a play date or, you know, different things that,
lots of meals.
Yeah. Lots of meals. Yeah. And you know, I'll say to that too, the meal thing, I once read an article, it was really, really good, that, you know, we do really good for a short time as the body of Christ for surrounding people when they're hurting, you know, but it seems like there's always this like 2 weeks of casserole and then done. Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I think, you know, in speaking to this question, there were those that absolutely came out of nowhere and surprised us. There were those that walked away after the 2 weeks of casseroles. And there were those that we hadn't met yet mm-hmm. that saw us from a distance, didn't know anything about autism and entered into our story, entered into our lives and came and supported us. And, so, you know, we just want to encourage families that if you are finding that you're losing friends, be encouraged. God has a bigger picture and he may be directing you to another community or, you know, other friends that you don't see coming in that moment. And same with family, you know, we had to explain, and we didn't always do the best in the beginning because frankly, we didn't know everything yet. You know, we still don't know everything, but Abby surprises us all the time. Right.
Right.
But, you know, we tried to do our best to explain what was going on. And we tried to do our best with handling, you know, vacations to see family and how that takes a lot to pack up and come. And it takes Abby out of her comfort zone and out of her routines and how that might mean that every time we see you guys, there's tantrums that occur. There's more difficulties because she's just in that state. And you know, so there's a lot of explaining that goes on, but there's also beautiful stories in the midst and support that can happen. But yes, those things do happen.
Mm-hmm. Eric, what's your perspective?
You know, it's, there's a big challenge because you're living the life and you're learning all about your own, but then you feel like you're constantly advocating for your child and then you're constantly having to educate people. And then quite frankly, it's exhausting.
Yeah.
So just, you know, whether it's family or other people, people sincerely care and you want to be patient with them and so forth. And, you know, your family's with you and all this, but you're constantly having to teach them, you know, that there's disability here. This isn't a personal, this isn't naughtiness. There's things going on here. Yeah. You know, the anticipation when you get together with friends and family is, oh, you're going to have some good intimate conversation and so forth like that. And, you know, that's one of the biggest things I think grieving through things is, you know, when you get together, if, you know, our daughter's all a part of the equation, that's not a realistic thing. You know, we celebrate what it is. I think one of the things we've talked about a number of times is not holding our expectations too high when we get together with people or, you know, as an entire family unit, because things are going to happen and you're going to be disappointed and you set yourself up for discouragement, even depression in terms of that. If you think, have this ideal that you're going to be all connected with everybody around and have, be all included. It's not realistic. It's hard. And so just really trying to, with all those situations, you know, when you want to especially include your child, have low expectations and just celebrate the fact you're doing it. And what are the little things along the way? You know, we've talked a lot. We will sacrifice unbelievable amounts of time, money, energy, for just brief moments, for her to celebrate. And, you know, other people don't necessarily understand mm-hmm. the sacrifice that you'll make for just a few minutes, maybe. Yeah. But, you know, that's what our life is. And that's what we've learned to appreciate. But it does go back to some of that grieving cycle. You know, you have to let go of mm-hmm. the expectations, because your life, as soon as you enter this special needs journey, is on a different trajectory, and it's going to have different things, and there's going to be losses, but then there's going to be beautiful gains along the mm-hmm. way too.
Yeah. And, you know, I think so often, you know, what people don't understand, we did a whole episode in this series about the grief that goes along with this. And mm-hmm. it's hard for people outside of the disability space to get that. I mean, it's a constant grieving cycle. You know, when a new milestone comes that our child can't reach, we're constantly grieving. And I think so often, you know, the husband and the wife may be at different, someone may be at acceptance when the other one is still at anger over a certain thing. And so giving that grace to each other, offering that grace of understanding that they're not at the same place we are. And so what do you say to people who are maybe struggling in that accepting that maybe your spouse is not at the same place where you are? And instead of getting angry and frustrated about that, what do you say to those families?
I think one of the biggest things is what we do, and I know you do, I've talked to Steve about this, is community and, you know, not getting isolated. You know, for example, you know, us guys that can get together, you know, for a breakfast, and because our life is so challenging, there's a transparency and understand that reality. And then you look and you say, hey, those other guys in the group have experienced some of this, and say, hey, this is a journey. You know, write it out now. There'll be different times. There's different cycles in life. One of the things that I think is real challenging, you know, with marriage is you look to your partner for support and to help you out of the situation, or you look to help them out of the situation. And when you talk about the grieving cycle, that's not necessarily a realistic thing. You know, I can't just all of a sudden, hey, snap out of it, feel better, get happy, let's go out for a date.
That'll make it worse.
Yeah, it really does. And so, you know, recognizing that and recognizing that there is a place, you know, for community with guys, with gals, you know, definitely, you know, as a leader of this group and the group's great, not trying to be a negative with this thing, but realistic. There's a difference between negative where you're just griping mm-hmm. and realistic saying this is what it is. It does suck. It is hard. And then coming together and saying, you know, there's better days, and people, any group that comes together, there's different ages and so forth like that to be able to share, but to just walk in each other's, you know, just to know somebody else is there and walking through a similar life is incredibly comforting. And, you know, it removes that isolation block, and it gives another outlet that's not just your spouse, because, you know, there's times you're missing something from your spouse that you'd wish because of all the heaviness of life and grieving. And, you know, once you work through those cycles, you can probably come back to it as a spouse, but having brothers and sisters along the way on that journey is a big thing. And I know you guys do a fantastic job, and that's what we're trying to do here, you know, to meet that need mm-hmm. As they journey through life and keep those marriages together.
Yeah. Yeah. Kristen, what's your perspective?
Yeah, same here. You know, Eric mentions the grief cycle again. It's so overwhelming to be in the situation you're in the same situation as a couple. You have the same circumstances staring you in the face, and yet you may be completely in a different place on that grief cycle. And so to have the grace that you mentioned, have the grace for the other, because it's not wrong for them to feel that way. It's just different, right? It's just, you're just in a different place. And so you got married to be partners in life. And so finding a way to be partners in that, finding a way to hold that space for your spouse while you don't feel that same way is everything. It's so important. And then community, it is unbelievably, important to find community, find your people who get it, who can rally around you, because it combats that feeling of being alone, that isolation that can occur so frequently with our families, because we are so busy with doing therapies, helping each other, along in the journey is so, so important.
Mm-hmm. So good. So true. And, you know, I know one of the things that just being in ministry, being, you know, for almost 20 years and seeing different families and seeing different situations, and even in my own story, some of the things that Jeff and I dealt with was there were oftentimes early on that we were not on the same page.
Yeah.
When it came to treatment plan for John Alex, you know, I was researching and finding all these things and I'd be like, okay, we need to do this. And it's that, striving, that feeling like, oh, I've got to, you know, we've got to do everything and try everything and frantic almost feeling. And so there'd be a lot of times, quite honestly, I would move ahead with things without talking with him. Well, then that causes conflict, you know, in our marriage. And we finally, probably when he was about 8 or 9 years old, I realized, I'm like, okay, this is not working. And we need to have a conversation about what we're, any treatment plan that we're going to do. And if we're not on the same page, we're not going to do it. We're going to stop and wait till we're on the same page. And there was, it was such a beautiful thing when I finally gave up that control that I felt I had to have to then communicate with him. And it helped to bring him in to making those decisions and those choices. And so before I would do anything with John Alex, adding in a new supplement, trying anything new with him, we had a conversation about it. And if we weren't in agreement, we didn't do it. If we were, we did. And so how do you guys work? Is that something you have dealt with before about kind of that conflict of, okay, you're laughing and smiling. I wish everyone could see you right now. But was that part of your story? And then how did you process through? Because I know you guys are at a different place now. So
yeah. Oh my goodness, Becky. Yes, we definitely identify with that. That is completely our story. And you know, I again was doing a lot of the therapies and a lot of the pushing for the latest research and getting involved in whatever we could do to help our daughter along. And in about the same time frame, you know, we just came to that point where this is not working and we needed that balance. And I would say what's beautiful is, you know, so we were able to sit down, revamp some things that we talked about earlier. And, but what's beautiful is in watching Eric start to take over and do some of the therapies and different things. Abby is such a daddy's girl and she loves her daddy. And Eric would go into these therapies and the therapist would make friends with Eric. And he just has this beautiful, different way of working with our daughter and working with the therapist. And so that balance was even in ways that weren't expected. And we're just, it was just such a beautiful thing to watch. And so, yeah, I absolutely, we would encourage couples to find that balance. Don't just be having one spouse hold most of it and the other spouse not. Find a way to find that balance. Have that conversation. Get some respite care or put your child to bed early and have a conversation because it is so, so important.
Yeah.
Yeah. And something I'd say, you know, we probably come from different perspectives. Definitely. She would like to try just about anything, especially on the early going. And I tend to be quite the skeptic. And so, you know, maybe the advice to parents, like I had to check myself. Why am I being skeptic? Is it because she brought something to the table automatically? I'm going to be skeptical and say no and resist. And I mean, I think it's growing as a person and saying, okay, let's really evaluate this without kind of any bias. Is this something good? Is this worthwhile? And then on the other side, if we're going to try to do every therapy, right? Is that because we want to try to fix something that maybe it's not supposed to be fixed? And you're riding through this journey and we're the ones going to get fixed through the journey and not our daughter in the process. She's created the way she's supposed to be, but you know, God has us on a journey. So it's a balancing thing. And it's like understanding if we can come from these two different perspectives, you know, there's a place to be skeptical of things. And, you know, there's definitely people that try to take advantage of these things. Don't need to go on that avenue. But on the other hand, you know, is there things that make sense to be able to work and to be able to pursue? You want to definitely have strike a balance, which I think anything in marriage, that's, you know, striking a balance between how you guys think, what your personalities are, and then what's best for your family and your child.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And having the space to have those conversations and not get mad at each other if you don't agree. You know, it's so easy for those conflicts to come up because we just want to be heard. And, you know, a lot of times I think I'm right. Sometimes I am, sometimes I'm not. And, you know, so, but being, I know that for us, when we got to that place of like, no, we are going to be in agreement. And sometimes it's interesting because it's a lot like you guys, where I would be finding everything and Jeff would be like, okay, this one's a little too far out there. Let's rethink. And then he was, you know, we'd talk about it and sometimes we'd move forward and sometimes we wouldn't, but, finding that balance and being respectful of each other and where you are in the process is so important. And I know you guys have worked through to get to that place where you can make sure you're on the same page. And, you know, I know you guys are in full-time ministry. You see families who are struggling with different things. What are some of the things that you've seen in some of the families that you work with as to where there may be struggles that come up between the differences between how a dad may respond and how a mom may respond?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we just in our date night focused on, you know, our theme was teamwork and being teammates in marriage. And I think it's just so important to encourage those that are new to the journey that in so many ways, this is going to get better. And to listen to your spouse and to just pause and encourage one another and find a way to get respite so that you can continue to have those conversations and get away together. But that teamwork is so, so important. And so we encourage that and encourage all of the ways that you can support that, such as, you know, don't be afraid to go get counseling. You know, often people grow up with an idea that counseling is, you know, not a great thing, right? And so just encouraging that, no, that's such a big help to working through things. And so encouraging couples to go do things like that. And
One of the things too, is sit with the dads is, you know, when a dad comes into an IEP meeting, it presents a completely different front. And I noticed that real early on. You know, if I'm in the meeting and I'm pretty gentle by nature, but all of a sudden I'm a downshift and it's like, this is not going in the right direction. You need to hear from it. It's amazing what that can do. Having you together as a couple in the room is definitely a big thing, that I would encourage. And then, you know, like she mentioned, we talked about this at, you know, our date night, is finding where your strengths are. So we could sit here and, you know, say guys should do this and girls should do that or whatever, but knowing where your strengths are and seeing where those strengths fit into making your marriage better. You know, I really try to encourage, like I say, dads to get involved with their child, with the therapies, with the IEPs as much as possible, you know, and be a part of that process and not just go to work and so forth like that. And most of these dads really are, their hearts are completely for their kids and working and balancing those things, which are challenging things. But, definitely try to do that and work with your spouse and know that, you know, that there's challenge the day to day and you have a lot of adversity coming your way with all the things, but, you know, brighter days are better and God definitely has a purpose in you guys working together, your child and, you know, how your child is going to speak to the outside world. And just really, you know, looking forward to hope that there is hope throughout the entire process.
Yeah, so true. And I love that you go to the IEP meetings. That was my husband as well. I mean, he was like, anytime there was a meeting, he was there. Even if sometimes he would speak up, sometimes he didn't need to, but he was there as that presence of showing we are a united front. We are going, you know, we are together in this with the care of our son. And so I love that. I think it's so powerful when the parents can come in together into that, to those situations. There was one meeting. It wasn't an actual IEP meeting. It was just, we were just having a school meeting and he was not able to come to that one. The meeting went south really quickly. It was very interesting. And he said after that, he said, I will be there for every, it doesn't matter. I'm not, am not going to miss, even those ones that are not the, you know, the IEP, the big meetings. And so it made, because he wanted to be there for me. I left that meeting in tears and he was like, nope, not doing that again. And so, you know, Eric, I would just ask, as we're closing out here, from your perspective as a dad, what would you say is the best way that moms can encourage dads in this journey?
I think one of the things that, you know, maybe the advice would be know the love language of your spouse. And if you can pour in little things along the way to doing it, it pours big dividends. You know, the road is challenging. We all want to be seen, but in particular, we want to be seen by our spouse and we want to be noticed and, you know, focus on the positives. There's plenty of negatives along the way too, but focus on the positives, focus on recognizing the things that we do as dads and so forth like that. And being able to do that. I know, you know, the technology, just texting is a simple thing. And, you know, she's done a lot, in particular lately, she knows my language. And just texting, I love you. I see you. Thank you for doing this. You know, there's things that I do that she doesn't do because, you know, you balance things and thank you for doing those things. You know, those things go a long, long way. You know, when your spouse notices, when you feel like your spouse notices and appreciates what you're doing, you're able to do it. You know, you want to sacrifice anyways, but it really builds for the marriage, you know, being noticed and then finding the love language, whatever that might be, you know, bringing something home special, whatever your spouse is, if you're a student of your spouse, then you'll know what those things are and you'll be able to pour into them. And then it just builds.
Yeah. Kristen, what about from your perspective, how can dads, men, fathers best come alongside and be supportive of their wives?
That is such a good question. you know, I think, again, so much goes on in a marriage and there are different personalities and things. And so I love what Eric said about be a student of your spouse and know their love language and know them. Husbands can support their wives in so many amazing and little ways just by listening to how the day went and not checking out on a phone, right? Just by being alongside your wife, allowing that space for her to cry. Also, the tangible things, again, like being in that IEP, that is so huge. Sitting next to your spouse and listening and advocating and also knowing or sharing that you see your wife and what she's doing and how she's working so hard. Because a lot of times, it just goes unnoticed. And again, it lends to that feeling of aloneness and isolation. And we don't want that in marriages. We want that ability to be, you know, connected and loving each other through life. And so, so many amazing, you know, little ways that spouses can support each other. But, I think that it's such a beautiful thing when a husband just comes alongside his wife and supports and encourages and advocates.
Yeah. And I think, you know, as we wrap up, just remembering that, you know, we are created different. We each one are created different. We're all wired differently. We're going to respond differently. We're going to process through the grief differently. But if we can come to that place of, no, we're a team. I love parent night out, your date night was about, you know, be on the same team. And even through those differences to find ways to work together and to offer grace upon grace upon grace to each other, then those differences then can come together and make actually your team a whole lot stronger. And so you guys are a great example of that. And I love how you're showing other couples and other families how to do that. So thank you guys so much for being on today. I'm just grateful for you. Love the work that you're doing. And just thank you for being here today.
Thank you so much.
Yeah, appreciate it. Thank you, Becky.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Rising Above with Becky Davidson, created and produced by Rising Above Ministries. To learn more about us and our resources for special needs families, visit risingaboveministries.org or download our free app. If you've enjoyed listening, want to hear more? We'd love for you to subscribe, rate, and review. You can always share it to encourage a friend. And remember, joy can be found in every story.